Hello, everyone. Welcome to Casa Walsh, a Beverly Hills 90210 podcast. My name is Sam, and on today's episode, we are going over season 7, episode 27, called I Only Have Eyes for You. It premiered on April 23rd, 1997. And before I get into the episode, I'm actually going to start with my interview with Keith Martyr. I had mentioned in the last episode that I had spoken to him. If you don't remember, he was the delivery man delivering Kelly the telegram on the last episode. It was a really funny kind of cameo if you watch it. I thought it'd be funny to talk to him, and we ended up having a really, really good conversation, and here it is. So this is my interview with Keith. So thank you so much for doing this. This is really, really cool.
Funny that, like, you noticed, like, that you saw it and noticed it.
Yes, yeah, so we're watching the episode, and we'll watch the episode and then we kind of review it, and you had just such a funny little, like, you know, like a wink and like a point. So we were like, started hysterical laughing.
And who then, is this guy?
Yeah. So we went and we looked you up, and my brother, who I was recording the episode with, he's like, he only has this one IMDb credit listed. So we're like, you must know someone or something.
Well, like a whole thing, and it was funny, but it was just a little backstory. Yeah. After happened, I had a friend who was playing professional hockey in Detroit.
Okay.
And he told me he was in the locker room the next day, and somebody said, "Do you notice that messenger? He was on the TV for a long time." Like, they gave that guy more time than you would expect. So I thought that was funny, and there was a story. So I'll tell you quickly the whole thing, and then you could go back and ask me what you want to know.
Sure.
So at that time, I was the television reporter and critic for the Los Angeles Daily News.
Okay.
And I was interviewing Aaron Spelling, and I believe the story was that there were all those hype shows on the WB network, yet Seventh Heaven was the highest rated show on the network. Mm-hmm. And he had a line that I used to love saying, because people said he just the trash TV. Mm-hmm. And he was like, "I ever tell you I did a little show called Family? You know, with Meredith, Barony, Baxter," and so he's so proud of that. Mm-hmm. So I went to, I could tell he was liking me. I love 90210.
Yeah.
One of my favorite shows. So I could tell he was liking me in the interview. At one point he said to me, "Where do your parents live?" And I go, "They live in Boca Raton." He goes, "Oh, I know one thing, you have very rich parents." Well, Mr. Spelling, their entire condo could fit in your garage. And he goes, "Probably could." So we were getting along. So finally I just said, "You know, my goal this year, I want to write a first person story. I want to be on 90210. I want to deliver a pizza to the Keg House. And I want to say Sanders extra cheese and pepperoni. That'll be 1950. And he yells, "Cindy, get in here. We got to write a part for Keith. He's going to deliver a pizza to the Keg House or the Walsh House. It's going to be great." Nothing happens. It's like a couple months later. I'm like, it's Aaron Spelling.
Tried, yeah.
So I was at a press thing and he's there. And I said, "Hey, Mr. Spelling," Keith Martyr goes, "Oh my God, my pizza guy." He goes, "I couldn't for the life of me remember where you worked." And he calls Jonathan Levin from Spelling. He was the president of Spelling Television. I don't know if he still was at the time. And he goes, "Hey, Jonathan, this is Keith Martyr." He goes, "The pizza guy?" And he turns to me, he goes, "He has not stopped talking about this. He was so unhappy, he couldn't remember where you worked." So I was like, "Oh," so he gives me his card. He goes, "Call me tomorrow." So I call and he goes, "Yeah, we'll do this." You know, and about a few days later, I get a call from casting. And they say, "Do you mind if it's not a pizza you deliver? Could you deliver something else, like a telegram?" I go, "Well, you have a show to do. I'm not going to tell you what." "Yeah, I'm fine."
Yeah.
And apparently, I was the only person ever get a part on the show that didn't have to read for it. And
Impressive.
Then I did my stuff, and I did all this like cheesy stuff. Like, I built a backstory for my character. I called telegram messengers to like interview them, what's going through their head. I was a method actor, and I said, what would be going through my head? And they said that they're probably not going to be home, and you're just going to leave it under the door. I said, "Okay, so but my people are going to be there. I know it. I have inside information." And I'm trying to think. And so then the director calls me, this guy, Les Sheldon, who was a really nice guy. And he said, the way it's framed, I don't know how I'm going to get you on TV, on screen that much. So I called Mr. Spelling, and he wrote those last two lines. So it was supposed to just be telegram for Kelly Taylor, sign here, please.
Yeah.
And then Aaron Spelling took it, and in his handwriting wrote, oops, wrong one, here, please, thank you.
Yeah, because I was going to say that was pretty funny, because I was like, that must have been, we thought it was ad-libbed, because you said, Kelly Taylor telegram, and then right after you're like, oh, wait, wrong place you signed.
So that was exciting. I said I nailed it on the first take. We did a couple others for safety. Mm-hmm. It was fun. Like I pulled in. I was like, it's a talent parking. Yeah. They sat down in the hair and makeup chair. I said, Mr. Spelling said you'd make my hair just look just like Dylan's. So I'm sure I asked him about that. And I don't know if you remember, my telegram like set up a whole thing in motion, because it was supposed to be from Dylan to Kelly. I'm coming to
town. Valerie was trying to
prove
start that, something
that she's still like Dylan. So they knew they were doing that hair anyway. So
yeah.
Brian Austin Green sat with me. He's, your friend.
Yeah, he's great.
He came to my dressing room, and it said like Keith Messenger on my dressing room. He goes, oh, Keith Messenger, how are you today? So a few years after, and at this point, I'm working at the WB Network. Mm-hmm. It was it must have been for the 90210 finale.
Mm-hmm.
Jason was there, and I'm sure he had no idea what the question meant, but one of my friends, reporter, said, hey, is there any chance you'll bring back Keith Martyr, the messenger, for the final episode? He said something like, we're currently in negotiations with Keith, and we're hoping we work. I'm sure he was just like
saying it, but yeah, that's funny.
Kind of cruel about it. And Luke, whenever I met him, was great, and I was the biggest Luke fan.
Yeah.
I once did a story when I was a reporter. This was at the Albany Times Union, on what they all put in their hair, like what they all.
And mm-hmm.
What was that singer that Tori dated? I had dinner with him in Albany once.
Singer that Tori.
Ray Pruitt.
Oh, right.
Right. Yeah.
So Ray Pruitt. Jamie Walters. Yes. He's a fireman now.
Really, I was going to say you really haven't heard from him since.
Yeah, I think he.
He was a decent guy.
I had heard that he actually had trouble getting work afterwards because people were really mean to him. Like they actually like couldn't separate the characters because he was abusive towards Tori's character. And they weren't, I guess, couldn't differentiate the fact that he's actually playing, he's an actor and he's not actually, abusing her. So it's kind of interesting that they did that it was sad for him, I guess, that happened.
Another little tidbit, that door I came into, mm-hmm. I think they only used that door one other time in the whole series.
Because when I had spoken to Brian, he said that that beach apartment that they had, he said that they were only there once when they first did it. And then they
we were in a soundstage.
They replicated it to the soundstage. So that's what they kind of used the whole time. He's like, we go back sometimes if we did like exterior shots, he said, but it was mostly just.
It was just this little, the soundstage, but it was a kind of fun day. A lot of, as I say, sit around and wait. I wrote a story for my paper and a story for the Albany paper that was a lot of fun. This episode actually aired on the anniversary of my bar mitzvah.
Oh, really?
And Aaron Spelling thought that was the greatest thing in the world.
That's so funny. I
love that. And my mother watched it and she was like, just to my part, she goes, I can't believe you made me watch that.
The funny thing is, I was doing, when I was watching the episode to recap with my brother, I don't remember why, but I was at my parents' house. We were out on Long Island and my mom was there. And I was like, we're going to watch this episode. Do you want to watch with us? So she's like, sure. So it was funny. She watched it and she kind of chimed in, but she said she watched it growing up. My mom, cause she was, she was younger. So she was like watching it.
A little bit after college, we would have big 90210 viewing parties, me and two of my friends. every week. And we used to love the thing, you know, how the episodes kind of have this abrupt ending.
Yeah.
Like then we would always say, oh, here comes the Charles Rosen scene, because it was like, it would just stop and then his name would just come on the screen. We're like, this feels like the Charles Rosen scene.
So were you like, so you said you were a fan of the show. So you watched were you in college around kind of like when it was on mostly?
Yeah, in college and right after. And then that's when he, that's why I was so into interviewing him. And that's why I was like, okay, I'm just going to ask if I could be on it. Then he almost put me in the Melrose finale.
Okay.
He said, oh, we got to get you on something else. I said, well, Mr. Spelling, if I do another one, I'm going to have to join SAG. And that's a lot of money. He goes, you know what? We'll give you a scene the first day of the week. The last day of the week, we'll pay you for the whole week and a paper SAG and everything else. But something, I don't know what happened. If I didn't, if maybe the newspaper didn't want me doing another one. I can't remember. But something happened that it fell through. I was giving in a wedding scene, I think, at the Melrose finale.
Well, the you know, it's funny because I actually didn't watch, because I was a little bit young, I think, for Melrose. So I didn't watch it when it was originally on. Like I remember some stuff, but so during the pandemic, I was like doing a rewatch of shows that I never watched. And I actually did a full binge of Melrose Place. And the last episode was Heather Locklear's character married Jack Wagner's character. Wait. So that's probably what it would have been, because that was
something of that wedding was my recollection. That's, I remember funny. This a lot, pretty well, for almost 25 years ago. This your worst interview ever?
No. I think it's funny. I think if people see the episode, they'll get a kind of kick out of it that I ended up speaking to you, because it's such a small, you know, part. And like I said, when we looked up on IMDb, we're like, oh, let's see what else he's been in. And that my brother's like, this is his only IMDb credit. So I was like, all right, I got to find out about this. So I was like, I got to find out. So we looked you up on LinkedIn. I saw you're in Real Estate Now.
And I also work at the Calhoun School on the Upper West Side.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Are you a teacher there, or what do you do there?
But I call myself plug and play. Like I'll substitute for any class. I've sold tickets to the play. I've taken the Model UN kids to Boston for a weekend. I've gone with like the biology class on a nature hike, like whatever they really need me for. So I live 7 blocks from the school. So when they need me, I'm right there. And it's a wonderful place.
So really let me ask you, so you know, I guess after college had moved out to LA area to do reporting?
I stayed in Albany for a while as the sports writer, then the television critic. Then I got the job at the Los Angeles Daily News and moved to LA.
Okay. And then what, how'd you come back to New York and kind of, you know, switch careers and stuff like that?
I always wanted to live in Manhattan. Like, you know, you grew up on Long Island. It was this magical place. We actually had a class in high school called Exploration of the Theater, where they would dump a high school class off in Manhattan and leave us alone. Kids, and this is Manhattan, was a little dangerous. That kids getting chains ripped off their neck, kids like losing money in 3-card Monte games. It was nuts. Mm-hmm. And so it was this magical place to me.
Yeah.
So I asked my boss at the time, who, you know, the CEO of the network, who's a buddy of mine. I was like, hey, I want to, you know, do my job from New York. He goes, well, I like that idea. He figured he'd have like a concierge in New York that could,
yeah,
you know, places. I was like, yeah, sure, no problem. So I came out here to do it. Then the WB folded, you know, that and the UPN folded, it became CW. So I ended up then at CBS Sports. At CBS, it was called College Sports Television. Mm-hmm. They ended up laying off like 70% of us, and then I transitioned to real estate.
Okay. How do you like it?
It's good. It's a grind. You really get to know people. You see them at a raw moment in their life. Because three things you can't live without are food, money, and shelter. And real estate is two of them. It's money and shelter. So people are, you know, they're nervous. And it's most people, it's their biggest investment. So you really, and you know, having worked with actors in public relations, it really helped me for that, because nothing was ever really about you, and your whole life was making them comfortable.
Right. That's true. Say,
Amanda Bynes, before she, be, you know, whatever, she would come to New York, and her parents, she was like 18, 19, her parents would just send her here with me, send her here to, like, not to stay with me, but like, so I had to take her out to dinner, and every night.
Oh, really? I was going to ask you, because you said you worked on What I Like About You.
I worked on every show on that network, actually, because I was more of a general person. Like, I didn't have specific shows. So, yeah, every show I was part of.
I assume she was, I mean, she was pleasant, because she was much younger. She was
a sweetheart back then. Oh, yeah. Sad. Things happen. She was, I remember somebody said to her, hey, do you go to like the clubs? Like, you know, I can't remember who the other actresses were at that time. Mm-hmm. And she said, no, I don't want to be like 25 years old and having done everything. I want things to look forward to. Like she was, her parents, her mom especially, did a really good job grounding her.
Yeah. It's a shame. Yeah. I mean, I think I did read though, it's kind of similar to Britney Spears. Like there is some like bipolar or something there.
Yeah, it was, because she was really, like, I had a niece who was, like, in love with her, and, like, she would call my niece, and she used to actually call me Uncle Keith.
Aww.
Once we were, so she would get, like, her hair done, her nails done during the day, and ask everybody, what's your favorite restaurant, what's your, so people would tell her, and at, like, 4 o'clock, she's like, can we go to Babbo? So I never liked calling and saying, hey, you know, I have a celebrity, but the guy at Channel 11 loved doing it, so I'd ask him. So he gets us this table at Babbo, and they sit us. It was this small table, and we're on the same side of like a banquette. I go, man, this feels weird. It kind of looks like we're on a date.
Mm-hmm.
She said, yeah, it's a little weird. So she said, could we move our table? And they took us upstairs. This is a table for four. Somebody wrote, it was Gawker Stalker at the time.
Oh, I remember that.
Saw Amanda Bynes at Babbo. She hated her table and complained, and they whisked her upstairs. She was with an enormous man that could have been her agent or perhaps her rabbi. That's one of my favorite moments.
That's funny. Gawker's done now, but I remember they had that was like a problem, I think, for a while, Gawker Stalker, because they were posting it, I think, in real time.
Right. There was no editing. Yet.
So people, if you saw a celebrity was somewhere, and if you were in it, like people were kind of bum rushing to those places. So I think a lot of celebrities,
paparazzi probably went nuts
too. Yeah, definitely. I mean, they have, there's an Instagram page called Dumois, and on their stories, it's like a celebrity, celebrity gossip site, if you will.
Riggins on Friday Night Lights and Dylan, I think, were kind of the same person.
In
the
I see it.
Without the money, but it was like, this kind of guy that's always trying to do right, but he's not really doing, you know, he kind of.
Yep. Yeah. I loved Friday Night Lights. That was a good show.
And he never had like, never cared about getting credit. You know, Riggins, he was just being Riggins.
Yeah.
And yeah, Dylan was the tragic of, he was sad.
He was. You know, I actually think out of all the characters, though, Luke Perry.
That was sad when he died.
That was devastating, but I think his character Dylan had the best storylines.
Yeah, he was the heart and soul of the show. I remember I was talking to a bunch of the writers of the show, and we were like debating that, and I was like, no, look at him, like he does like the best by everybody, he's doing all this stuff, and it was interesting, but I was like, no, he was the heart and soul, I thought, of the whole show.
And Brandon, oh, yeah, for sure. Brandon,
like the all-American kind of perfect boy,
right? Yeah.
You know, what was really nice to me was Andrea when I met her.
Oh, was she?
Yeah, she was a very nice person.
She's now the president of SAG.
Yeah, she's an impressive person.
Yeah. Yeah, she was a lot older than the rest of them. So yeah. I know she didn't get involved in the drama because she's probably like these stupid kids.
Luke was older. I think Luke was like 27 or something. Like he was like in this
She, I believe, when they first started the show, I mean, she looked great. Because I'm just thinking,
women, you know, always say, oh, she's so pretty. That was always like the thing. She's an actress. She's not going
to
be an actress.
Yeah, no, but it was, they made her, they tried to make her like the nerdy girl, but I was like, she's very pretty girl.
Aaron Spelling production. Like, yeah. She doesn't have unattractive people.
It's not right, of course.
Our casting woman, who was the greatest, she actually discovered Vince Vaughn.
Oh, and really?
His career. She had him signed and locked to do a show on our network, and he got Jurassic Park, and he said, is there any way you'd let me out of the show so I could do this movie? And she let him out. And I met him once at a bowling alley, and I said, oh, I work with her. He goes, that woman, she said, like, she made whoever I am today is because she let me do that movie.
Right. Who knows what I have? Yeah, because that was, he was the star of it. It was a Jurassic Park. He was in the second one or the third one?
I'm not exactly. I just know he was like, that was,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he was the star of the movie, though. Yeah.
I'm sure it was one of the shows that like never got picked up. Yeah, so she had all these guys, like Penn Badgley, she would have on a different show every year.
New show is coming out soon, the new season, on Netflix.
That's, he's good in that.
He is good. Very creepy.
Howard was in a different show for us every year. Like we had all the, he was in that Gross Point, the 90210 takeoff.
Okay.
Yeah,
I
it
know
was
who
a,
he is. Yep.
yeah, he's saying she just had, we used to, I used to call it the, you know, the All Stars, the Kathleen Lettery All Stars. Like every year in casting, I would go out to the lobby and hang out with the same guys. Hey, how are you guys doing this year?
Thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time to speak with
Very
me.
nice.
And I'll shoot you an email just to kind of let you know and stuff when this is coming out and where you can find it.
Water at Brown Harris Stevens.
I will, yeah, plug away, honestly.
Part of the OK team. If you're not working with Olga and Keith, it's not OK.
That's great.
It's a slogan I came up with.
Perfect. Thank you, Keith. I appreciate
Sure.
it. Have a good
Bye-bye.
day. Bye. So I hope you enjoyed that. But now we are going to get into the episode. So it starts out, and Brandon and Kelly wake up together in his bed. So they are officially back together. They're even talking about that. Down the hall, Valerie is annoyed to hear them kind of playing around in the morning. Steve, however, is clearly happy for his friend because Steve's a good friend. On campus, Donna and Claire remind Kelly that they had plans to watch a gymnastics competition together that night, but Kelly already has plans with Brandon. Donna and Claire aren't sure, or they're not into her canceling plans to hang out with a guy. Also, they're making it out to be like this, like gymnastics thing is something that they do on the regular. Maybe so. We've never heard of it, never seen of it, or anything like that. So it's kind of funny. Anyways, Brandon and Steve are going to an auto show with David the next day. So they're talking about that. Donna complains to her friends about how harder classes that she's taking. Then Claire complains again about Kelly ditching them for Brandon. I mean, is it that big of a deal? Like you'd be like, oh, you suck. But she like just got back together with him. If she wants to spend time with her boyfriend, is it that big of a deal? I don't think so, but whatever. Valerie reveals that she was on her high school gymnastics team and wants to see the competition. I think it was, you know, definitely. She's like, oh, I have nothing to do, but the gymnastics competition tonight, I know what I'm gonna do. I definitely need to watch that. So it was definitely like trying to get them, I think, to invite her. So naturally, they take the bait. Don invites her to watch with them. Then at the Walsh's, Kelly goes into Valerie's room to close the window, and she sees that her journal is there, the journal that she got for her. Remember that Christmas episode they each got each other the same journal? Anyways, she was about to read it, but she had a sudden conscious decision not to. And then when Brandon comes home, they're in Valerie's room. And she questions why there's no pictures of her family on her walls because all the pictures on her walls is basically Brandon and Steve, who it's kind of sad. Like, that seems to be like her only friends, like Brandon and Steve. Like, she doesn't have any other friends or anyone else to hang out with, besides that. Anyways, at the beach apartment, the girls enjoy others' company and, show off some of their gymnastics moves. Very impressive that Tori Spelling can do a split because she did split in that. I've never been able to do a split. There was one time, I think it was probably in high school, that I was like convinced that I could do a split. So every single like day, and it only lasted about a week, I would try to do a split. So I figured, oh, each day if I try to do it like a little bit more, I can do it. Nope, never was able to do a split. But Tori can, so very impressive. Maybe she was a gymnast when she was younger. Anyways, they plan to score the routines themselves. So this is something they do. Valerie goes into Kelly's room to get the markers and also obviously sees her diary there. Only stopping, she was gonna read it, but she stops when the others call her back to the room. She pours her glass of champagne though in Kelly's flowers. So sweet, Val. Never taking. She's just funny. Oh, gotta love her. At the Walsh's, Kelly tells Brandon that she doesn't even like gymnastics, but she does feel bad for ditching her friends. Then they come across a puppet show on the TV, and Kelly gets very excited about it. It's called the Magic Morton Hour, and she was obsessed with it when she was a kid. Magic Morton hosted puppet skits, introducing each by waving a magical wand over them, and Kelly thought that, he could make anything happen. She asked her father to send away for one of those wands, and she could basically wave it over her parents and get them to love each other. But she never got the wand. So Brandon's like, you know what? I'm gonna see if I can get one of those for you. What a nice boyfriend. I mean, I don't think she would use it for good, but I guess it's for sentimental purposes. I don't know if there's anything that I could think of that I would get sentimental over now. I don't know. Anyways, later that evening, the girls are a little tipsy now. They're goofing off, and Valerie clearly is too drunk to drive home, so they invite her to spend the night. But like I guess they were gonna let her spend the night on the couch, but she's like, "All right, Kelly's not here. I'll just go sleep in her room." And they're like, they don't say anything. 'Cause she just kind of goes off into Kelly's room, and then it's just Donna and Claire. Like she's probably not gonna be happy too about it, but whatever. Valerie finds Bill's business card. In her room, and then settles to read the journal. In the morning, she puts the diary back where she, where basically where she found it. And Kelly comes home, and she's definitely like surprised that Valerie's there. But does the whole like, well, you wouldn't have want me to drive home drunk, would you have, Kel? So she's like, obviously, that's fine. But the reason why Kelly came over early in the morning, she tells Donna and Claire she's hosting dinner for all their friends at the Walsh house, and she even invites Valerie. I mean, Valerie does live there, so it would be weird, but she does ask her actually, I guess, if she can get someone to cover the club for her and David so they can both go. Apparently, Joan's cousin used to be a TV grip, so Nat calls Magic Morton on Brandon's behalf. I guess he was a TV grip for the show, got a connection. So Brandon has to pretend to be a big fan of the show so he can get a meeting with Magic Morton later that day. So he's gonna go to the auto show with David and Steve, and then he's gonna go to Magic Morton's to, I guess, get this wand. I mean, it's kind of dumb, but whatever. I don't know. So at the auto show, there's a contest going on giving a winner a chance to test drive an electric car. Wow, an electric car! Can you believe such a thing? That's sarcastic now because there's a whole ton of electric cars. But anyways, back in 97, I guess it was not really a thing yet, but obviously now electric's the way to go. Steve does bribe the guy to let them take the drive without entering the contest because obviously that's Steve. Donna, Claire, and Valerie go to an aerobics class, so we can just basically say how much fun the three of them are having together. It's also like giving the implication that's like Kelly has a boyfriend, and then the other two are like the single friends, so they need to do stuff like together. Yet both of them are in serious relationships, so it's just kind of funny that it's like they're making that like a thing. Anyways, Kelly starts to work on the dinner. She's cooking for everyone. It's gonna be their favorite dishes, whatever. So at the auto show, the guys get a code to punch to make the electric car start. I don't think there's codes now. I think it's just a, well, they're just buttons, but I think you have to, you just charge it now. They have like charging stations actually. You see a lot, you know, for all the cars, like Tesla charging stations. I don't know. Anyways, so to get the car to start, they need this code. They don't get suspicious at all that the auto show guy doesn't want anything from them in return. He seemingly just basically trusts them to let them go out alone. Like, they figure, like, do you want our driver's license? Like, something to, like, hold us to come back. And he's like, nope, you're good. So this electric car, though, is only a two-seater. So Steve stays behind because Brandon's like, all right, here's what we'll do. I'll drive the car to Magic Morton's house. You drive back to pick up David. Then when you guys come back, David will take, you know, I don't know. I guess David will get like a chance to drive the car and then whatever. I don't know. But anyways, they take off. David's gonna stay behind there, and just as they leave, we find out that the auto show guy was in fact fired. So that's why he didn't give a shit about giving them the code or anything like that. He was fired, and yeah. Anyways, the girls hang out now at the sauna. Okay. Donna's like, to Valerie, why don't you hang out with us more often, Val? Oh, right, it's because you and Kelly would kill each other and hate each other. Valerie says it's fine if Kelly talks badly about her, since she's also talks badly about Claire and Donna. She's like, oh, for instance, she hates Claire's hair and thinks Donna only, you know, all about her grades and all that stuff. Donna and Claire obviously don't believe her, but Val's like, no, it's true. She wrote it in her diary, which they think is wrong, obviously, that she read it. But she's being honest that she read it, which is kind of funny, but I don't know. Anyways, so Brandon and Steve get pulled over in the electric car, which was reported stolen. Obviously, the guy was fired, didn't tell him about the car, so they reported it stolen. They get arrested for Grand Theft Auto. However, David obviously meets them at the police department and announces that the guy who loaned them the car has disappeared. Claire then starts getting self-conscious about her hair. Donna tells her that Valerie could have lied. Besides, roommates always do things that bug each other. And Claire starts to wonder how much Kelly complains about her to other people, realizing that Valerie was telling the truth. Claire goes to look for Kelly's diary, but Kelly took that with her. And the girls decide they don't want to go to Kelly's dinner party now because she's talking badly about them. Oh my God, is this boring? Anyways, Brandon finally makes it to Magic Morton's. But Morton is annoyed that Brandon didn't respect him enough to get there on time. Obviously, you know, he was the jail situation. But Brandon guilts him by talking about breaking promises to children and Kelly and Bill's relationship, blah, blah, blah. But it worked. He got to talk to him. So the dinner party's a bust since Valerie's the only person to show up and she's late. Kelly immediately is suspicious of what she knows about Donna and Claire's current feeling towards her, and Valerie basically taunts her that she's read Kelly's journal and told her friends what she wrote. So not that nice of her. So the next morning, Donna and Claire feel bad about getting mad at Kelly for expressing her feelings in her journal. Kelly tells them that she writes about them because they're so close, and who else would she write about? But she's grateful to have them in her life, even, you know, when they bug her. Donna and Claire come up with a plan to make things up to Kelly, so it involves Steve, David, and food. David tells Donna that that couples tend to spend a lot of time together when they first pair up, obviously. Donna admits that she feels jealous of Kelly and Brandon's relationship because of their intimacy, But she reminds him that she won't remain a virgin forever. Sure, okay. I mean, obviously she's not gonna be, but it's just funny, like Donna's weird. Anyways, Kelly goes to see Brandon, who presents her with the wand. He's also collected letter Bill sent Magic Morton, which Morton kept all these years. Sorry that basically the wand was never sent. So Kelly didn't think her dad actually sent the letter, but he did when she was little. Kelly reads the letter and is touched by the lengths that her father went to for her. The others make an apology meal for Kelly, celebratory meal for Kelly and Brandon reunion. Claire is called to Valerie for obviously causing a rift between the girls. Valerie goes up to her room to mope, but looks at Bill's business card, which she obviously stole, and obviously is coming up with her revenge plan, and she is going to plan on investing in Bill's business. So, never, that's just Val. Val being Val. But yeah, that is it for the episode. Fun facts and tidbits. The only thing that I have for this episode is a spotlight. And the spotlight is on the guy who played Magic Morton. It was actor Dom DeLuise, who I definitely knew. I knew his name. I knew. So I was like, let's do it. So he was born Dominic DeLuise on August 1st, 1933, in Brooklyn, New York. He unfortunately passed away on May 4th, 2009, when he was 75 years old. So he was apparently, when I'm doing my research and stuff, he was in a bunch of Mel Brooks movies. So that's probably why I knew him. He was born in Brooklyn, Italian home. He actually went to the Manhattan High School of Performing Arts and later went to Tufts University. So he obviously was a smart guy because that is a very good school. Apparently his death, sadly he had been battling cancer, they said for more than a year prior to his death, and was also suffering from high blood pressure and diabetes. So I'm sure it all worked together, kind of all tied together. But looking at his career, he started working in film in 1964, and I think probably like the 70s were, his big stuff. Looking at, his roles that he was in, Blazing Saddles, he was in, which is obviously very good, Mel Brooks movie. He was in, it said the Muppet movie, but they said that was a cameo, which is kind of cool. He also worked with a lot with Burt Reynolds, it seems. He was like in Smokey and the Bandit, and that stuff. But yeah, I guess Spaceballs is probably kind of like one of the most famous parts that I kind of remember him from, because that is such a good movie. And if you haven't seen Spaceballs, you should. But he was like the voice of Pizza the Hut, in that movie. Anyways, it's a good movie. Robin Hood, Men of Tights, and just a whole slew of other things. And his son, he's got a couple of kids, but one of his sons, and I think I definitely recognize the last name. He definitely, well, he's got three kids actually, so that are all actors. So Michael DeLuise, I just clicked on his picture and I was like, wow, I know him. He was the villain in Encino Man, which I love. So that's kind of funny. He's got another son, Peter, who acts as well. I believe he was on 21 Jump Street, this one, and I think he did an episode of Friends, if I remember. And then there's one other son. So he's got three boys. They all look alike, a lot alike, which is kind of funny if you look at his kids. Who's an actor as well, and they've all been kind of doing some stuff here and there. So yeah, he had three kids all acting. So kind of cool. But yeah, that's the fun facts and tidbits and spotlight for this episode. Thank you all for listening to Casa Walsh, a Beverly Hills 90210 podcast. On the next episode, we've got season 7, episode 28, called All That Jazz. And my sister will be with me to recap that episode. So thanks for listening, and we will see you next time.